You're listening to the Recovered Life Show, the show that helps people in recovery live their best recovered lives. And here is your host, Damon Frank.
And welcome back to the Recovered Life Show. I'm pleased to introduce my guest today. It's Sam Jones, who is a marriage and family therapist based in Chicago. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
I am thrilled that you are here. It's the first time on the Recovered Life Show for you. So a big welcome from the Recovered Life community.
Thank you.
We have an interesting topic for today's show. You know, I wanted to do something about self-esteem in the recovery process. And I wanted to bring on a therapist like Sam, who deals with people who are in recovery and people not in recovery, right? That talking about self-esteem, because I think self-esteem is such an important thing to get. I think it's misunderstood a lot in recovery. So Sam, I'm so glad that you're here to talk about this to the Recovered Life community today.
Thank you. I'm excited to talk about self-esteem. It's a huge topic about the therapeutic process.
You know, let's dive into the whole self-esteem stuff. You know, what is self-esteem? Because I think a lot of people misunderstand self-esteem as ego.
They don't
know, like, is it ego or it, like, what is self-esteem?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I think of self-esteem, I think of the thoughts that we're having about ourselves, right? You know, it's not so much ego, but it's kind of like our, in some ways, it's kind of like our inner critic, right? Like, or it could be like our inner, you know, best friend, right? Depending on what kind of level of self-esteem, like, you're kind of sitting with, right? So your inner critic can, you know, kind of show up as like, you know, you're those inner thoughts that are just, you know, ooh, that didn't feel right. Or, oh, you kind of screwed up there a little bit. Or, you know, it's a, oh, that felt a little tough, but you actually worked through that pretty well for yourself, right? So I kind of think of it as like a spectrum of, you know, from going from it's, but it's all these thoughts that you have about yourself. It's thoughts about that you have about the way you look. It's thoughts about the way that you are perceived in the world. And it's sometimes it's impacted by the society that we live in. It can be impacted by the society that we live in, or you know, just by your surroundings. But it really is just kind of like how you internalize all of that to like kind of think about yourself.
You know, it's interesting because when you say inner voice, right?
Yeah.
One of the things in early recovery that you find is the inner voice that's been talking to you saying, hey, you don't have a problem here.
Sure.
Everybody drinks like this.
Yeah.
If it's really these people, that's the issue. It's not really an addiction. I could leave it at any time, right? You realize really quickly in early recovery that that has been a lie. So I think, you know, right? Like that inner voice, you can't really trust that inner voice. As a matter of fact, that inner voice is trying to kill you a lot of the time. So I think it's hard for people to trust that inner voice.
Yeah.
When it comes to their self-esteem, because really early recovery conditions you to kind of not take that inner voice so seriously, or you end up drunk.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That would definitely make sense. And so then I think about it from when you're in recovery and maybe you're in that therapeutic sense, right? Whether you're in a therapy or in group therapy of some kind, it's, you know, building on what do I know about myself to be true? What do I know about myself to be a lie, what have I learned about myself through the recovery process to kind of attack those lies a little bit, right? Of that didn't seem to be, you know, the best way for me to go about that. Can I find something else?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I found in my own recovery process was other people, you know, either having a sponsor, a therapist, really probably a lot of different people, honestly, friends that would actually tell you the truth. You know, we always say on the Recovered Life Show, one of the great things about recovery, if you're listening to this, and you're thinking about getting into recovery, you are going to find people who are going to tell you the truth. It might not be what you want to hear, but people are going to tell you the truth, right? And I think that that's super important. You know, let's dive into a little bit about symptoms of low self-esteem? Because I think, mm-hmm. like we said, people are confused about what self-esteem is in general. But yeah. how do you know if somebody has low? How do they know if they have low self-esteem, if this actually could be one of the issues?
I think it probably comes a lot from the words that they use about themselves, right? So, and it could show up in personal, it could show up in work situations, right? I really screwed that up, or, oh, I'm so bad, right? I'm so bad. I'm so dumb. I'm so this, I'm so that, right? So using like that kind of labeling language really kind of emphasizes it in your brain and in your mind of that kind of dynamic of, oh, I'm so bad. I did that so bad, right? I think of it as, I think that's one major component of having low self-esteem. I think another component of having low self-esteem is not really knowing or not being able to make, you know, healthy choices for yourself, right? Whatever that looks like for you. So like not engaging in like, you know, movement or anything like that, that could prove to be like healthier for you. When I think of like, what are the symptoms of low self-esteem? Those are the two things I think of the most.
You know, the negative self-talk, I think, is something that everybody has. Like, look, yeah. I think negative self-talk is a human condition. And I always say yeah. people are always recovering from something, right? Everybody's yeah. recovering from something, right?
Sure.
And this whole negative self-talk thing, I think it's really a game changer. I have dealt with a lot of people who in the recovery process, Sam, that are stuck, okay?
Yeah.
And they're stuck usually for a lot of different reasons. Well, two reasons. One is they have fear, right?
Sure.
But even if they're able to get past the fear, they have this negative self-talk, and basically it all boils down to they're broken, right? Well, they mm-hmm. couldn't get that right. They ended yeah. up in, they ended up sober. They have no idea how they got there. You know, it's a little bit mysterious why we make the decision when we're going to do it right. So your self-esteem is very, very rattled. And there is that demarcation line, Sam, yeah. where you have to say, you know, I always found it's like, okay, I have to be accountable. I'm not mm-hmm. broken, right? Like this is the big thing. Like I tell people all the time, it's like, no, you're not broken. You made, yeah. maybe you made bad decisions. Yes, you can't drink like your fellows, but now you know, knowing's half the battle, right?
Yeah.
You're not broken. It's like you have to pick yourself back up and you have to move on with your life and you have to create the life that you know that you can have in recovery. And it's going to be way better. It's going to be way better because you're in recovery.
Yeah, I think that's a really important part. And I think about that when I'm working with clients about this idea of healthy striving versus perfectionism, right? So, you know, perfectionism, I think, is where we kind of get caught a lot of, in order for me to be successful, I have to do it this way and it has to be just right. And I can't make any sort of mistakes because otherwise then it's kind of like that all or nothing thinking. Whereas healthy striving is the awareness of, I know that I don't always love myself, right? I know that I don't always, talk well about myself, and I'm working towards becoming more kinder to myself, becoming more kinder to my body and the ways that I feed my body, right? And the people that I surround myself with to challenge myself, to bring myself awareness of other things around me that that can help me grow.
Yeah, I think this all or nothing, this black and white thinking, a lot of people in recovery have this. Mm. I know I did. One of the hardest things for me to do has been like on the spiritual side of it is really kind of let go, Sam, because, you know, a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, with the perfectionism is like, I'm horrible. I have, yeah. you know, I realized like, and I don't know if you've had this in your own personal life, right? But the inner talk of the expectation that I have for myself and yeah. also other people, I've realized I've had to really re-gear that, right? Like, because the expectation is what kills me is like, I have, well, it should be like that. It should be like that. And what I end up doing is I should all over myself.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, you get paralyzed and you're not really working at the high performance level that you know you can, because you're stopping yourself with these expectations that are super unrealistic.
Yeah, definitely. And that's certainly something that I have to consistently work on myself. Even though I'm a therapist, I still go to therapy myself, right? I call myself like a recovering perfectionist, a recovering people pleaser, of really kind of doing my own, inventory, if you will, of like, are the things that I'm engaging in things that I actually want to engage in? Or am I just doing it because I feel like there's an expectation about me that I need to fulfill right now? And when I listen more to my own inner, my inner thoughts, and realize that I don't want to engage in something, or I don't want to engage with someone, the better I actually feel about myself, and that I can trust myself to make choices for myself that are more aligned with my values, what I want out of my life.
You know, it's interesting that you say it like that, because one of the realizations that I had, there's a guy who's been on the Recovered Life show a lot. Shout out to George, a fellow traveler with us, and he's been on. He always talks, every time I talk with George, when I say I'll make a statement about something, right? And it's usually, yeah, oh, I'm disappointed that that didn't work out for me, or I didn't do that the way that I wanted to, right?
Yeah.
And he always says, he goes, well, who said it was supposed to be like that? And, and he basically trained me, Dave, Sam basically said, hey, like, I started to ask myself, who is this person that has this expectation? Because I'm not quite sure that that person's me. I mean, it's me. I'm not talking from a schizophrenic view here, right? I'm talking, I'm talking from like just a human view. It's like, who is this person? Because this isn't necessarily who I am or what I believe.
Yeah.
And and I catch myself a lot doing that. I think everybody does, but I see it in other people. I'm like, well, who said, like, I made this really bizarre statement the other day. Like, I consider myself a high performing person. I do a lot of stuff. I've got businesses. We've got the podcast that's growing, all this stuff. And, sometimes I'll just say, it's like, oh, it should have done this. And then as an expert in that field, I go, that is totally unrealistic.
Yeah.
Like, why would, like, I, as a, even a professional, wouldn't tell a client or anybody that it should be like that? It's totally unrealistic. Who is this person that always talks to us about what it should be, how it's going to be? Who is this voice that sets up this expectation?
Oof, that is a loaded question, because, and I know it's like, I think it was rhetorical, but I think it also leans into, when I talk with a lot of my clients in therapy, this idea of this, this person, it should be this way. And sometimes we find out it's a person that really impacted our lives, whether that's a parent. And I don't mean to, by any means, like, blame parents, right? Because they only do what they can do. But sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's a past, like, coworker, or something, like someone who had, or sometimes it's just society or the expectations of society, right? So it's interesting, because we know that it's ourselves, right? Like, we know that we're hearing that that's our voice, but it can sometimes come from a lot of different places.
Yeah. And I think even beyond where it comes from, I mean, I know certain things with myself and in life in general, and just working with other people, that a lot of it is conditioning. It can be trauma. It could be a lot, it could be a lot of different, like, they're looking at trauma now with addiction as that being a linked component, there's a bit of a mystery behind all of it. I always find that low self-esteem starts really in childhood, right? Like, I can see that, because it's interesting when you look back and you talk to somebody who has what I call chronic low self-esteem, they always tend to bring up traumas that they've had in the past to support the belief of why they should have low self-esteem. And it's I find it really interesting. It's almost like the committee that we talk about in addiction, that committee that comes together that says, no, you know, this recovery process is BS and, you know, you were fine. It wasn't that bad. If you try it again, but do it this way, it'll be good. Right. Like I find self-esteem uses that same committee.
Yes.
Right. To come after you. How do you combat that? Like you're getting this negative self-talk that's coming in. Sam, how do you just throw down the gauntlet and say, okay, no more of this negative self-talk? What do you do? What are the steps that you do?
So I often find with a lot of my clients that externalizing rather than keeping it inside, right? So just keeping those thoughts inwards, externalizing kind of helps us understand that thought is real for them. Right? That it actually exists. It doesn't just live in their brain, that they kind of repeat to themselves. So we talk a lot about what are the thoughts that you have about yourself? And we kind of go through some fact checking, right? Is that true? Is that something that is justified or has evidence of, right? If we're thinking about, let's just say the statement is, I'm the worst friend in the world, right? Let's just say that that's the statement. I might ask my clients, you know, what do you think is the evidence to show that you are the worst friend in the world? I find that hard to believe. And, you know, we'll talk through like all these fact-finding different statements or these questions to kind of just check in with ourselves and kind of understand where is that coming from. And I find that externalizing that is really, really helpful to get it out of the brain, to make it real for them. And it really kind of helps them reframe like, oh, actually that doesn't seem to be very true because I have all this evidence that tells me that I'm not a bad friend. I show up with, and I show up for people and I check in with people and I, you know, even if I can't physically be there with them, I make sure to check in with them. So I guess that's not really true. Right. So I guess like, I think the more reframed version of that is that I am a friend that's doing the best that I can, right?
Yeah, I love that. I love the whole thing about the thinking not being true. You know, it's interesting. One of the crazy things about the recovery journey that I found is that as the years go on and the decades have gone on for me, and I see other people in recovery like coming in, one of the things that really shouts out to me is how much of my thinking isn't necessarily real. Like, right. Like there's intuition, right. There's intuition. And I've learned how to kind of differentiate the difference between, oh, well, that's my ego. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's low self-esteem. This is intuition, right? Like when you start to really listen, like one of the things that I have in my spiritual practice this year in my recovery is to like really start listening to the signs that I'm getting in life, right? To look around and see it. Because sometimes we're so busy doing stuff, we don't stop and think about, is that true? Is that not true? And I like how you put that because I have found that if you can get past your ego, most of what we're thinking in life, most of the stuff, the capacity that our brain is just not even in reality. It's just not even real. And to free yourself from that, I think is a game changer in recovery because what it allows you to do is really live an amazing life because you're able to really let go of that.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of vulnerability. I can't underestimate like the vulnerability that it takes, right? Even if you're externalizing with a friend, right? Hey, when we were at that party, like, I think I really made a real ass of myself or something like that, you know, and having that vulnerability to say that to someone, you know, whether it's a trusted friend, whether it's like a, you know, a sibling or a parent or something like, or a therapist, right? And just having that vulnerability to say that out loud can sometimes be the biggest hurdle to take the thought out of your brain and into reality of, I think I really screwed up there. And people can kind of like help you understand like, well, why do you think that, you know, Tell me about your thought process. I'd like to hear that because it didn't seem like that. That wasn't my experience of you. I understand that it might be your experience, but tell me more about that. I'd like to hear more about that. And it can be a really vulnerable thing, but once you actually physically sit down and do it, you find that I have, speaking for myself, I have found that that is the biggest help to slashing almost all of my anxiety. Almost all of
Yeah. Well,
it.
look, we had an episode several weeks ago with a therapist who suffered from, mood disorders, anxiety, and depression, and is also a therapist. And it was great because we heard it even, he has every tool in the world, every degree in the world, every resource in the world. And he said, look, anxiety is a human condition. Depression is a human condition. And for some people, it's more, right? I think a greater mental health discussion regarding self-esteem needs to happen because I have seen a lot of people get stuck simply because, it's not a mood disorder. It's not a behavior disorder. It's not, they're sober. It's really simply self-talk. It really at the end of the day, and you take those exact same people and you put them in a group, in a surrounding that feels that anything's possible, that doesn't see them how they see themselves, that reminds them, dude, like, you're my friend. And I would, I remember somebody saying, I had some really negative self-talk about myself once, and my friend turned around to me, Sam, and said, look, if you were somebody else talking about you like that, I would kick their ass. That's not acceptable. And it's interesting how much community plays a role. I'd like to talk about that a little bit because how does community play a role? Because if you're listening to this and you're just a chronic negative self-esteem junkie, right? And you're listening to this and you can't get out of it, it could be who you're around.
Could be. Yeah, absolutely. I was just finishing up a book about trauma from Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey, What Happened to You? And the amount of individualism that just exists in our society is ludicrous for me, because all I think when we can truly connect with others, that is part of the human, that is the most important part of the human experience, is being able to connect with others that might maybe have different experiences, maybe have similar experiences to us that we can learn from, that we can help heal with, that we can just have a conversation. I think especially now that we have so much technology, we really get away from that, right? We hide behind or maybe not hide, but we have our phones, right? And that's the thing that we think is creating a community for us. But really, like, humans crave touch. They crave, genuine interactions with people. We know this. And so creating a community where, number one, you feel safe, right? Number two, you feel supported, and number three, you can be challenged, right? I think those three things are the most important thing to find a community. And so if you're in a community that you don't feel challenged, maybe because you're all kind of in the same boat of the same feelings of low self-esteem, low self-worth, then it might be time to maybe not completely ditch that, that community, right? I think that's still an important community to have, but like, what kind of elements can we introduce into this community that we have that we can kind of challenge ourselves to try something different? Because whatever is happening right now doesn't it we're keeping that homeostasis. We're keeping that like that that just general like existence of the same kind of pattern. So can we introduce something else into it? Can we get ourselves out of our, let's say, out of our houses? Can we go do something together, right? Can we go do something that we all enjoy, that maybe that's something that brings us passion or gives us creativity?
Yeah, I think the key always is other people, right? Because It's interesting. You talk about fear a lot, and I do think that that's at the basis of a lot of this, is that, like I'm going through something right now, and I was shocked about how I overreacted to it, right? Like I was like, this is an overreaction. I saw it in myself. I could see it myself. This is a real, what's this all about? What was fear, right? Like at the end of the day, it was fear. And I find that like you're never really going to be able to get out of yourself, out of stuff yourself. Like, yes, you have tools. At the end of the day, it's just going to be you, right? Like, so you have to have the tools and work the tools. But the magic of life comes in the community, right? It comes in actually connecting people. And one of that I've done with like the people that I accountability coach or even in my business clients and stuff is I say, you know what? Like when we're feeling like this, the biggest remedy is to start rapidly getting into action and connecting with other people. Even if that's just calling them and saying, hey, how are you doing? Right? Like, you know what I mean? Because there's something that opens us up when the, you know, I think what it happens is COVID has done this. Like, I don't know if you see this with your clients, but I noticed this. Like, I realized, like, oh man, I don't really go to physical meetings anymore. I'm not connecting with people. You know, the office situation is different than it was before, right? Like there, this lack of it's, you know, I love Zoom, I love all this stuff, but there is also a, you need more than that. You have to actually connect with people, right? Like, and so there's just this lack of it. Can we talk about this whole thing about building this community for self-esteem? Who should you find? Because I think a lot of people will find people like themselves and then end up more depressed than that they were when they started. Who do you pick? How do you do it?
Great question. So I do this a lot with my clients, especially clients who maybe just don't know where to start, right? I ask them to create a list for yourself. What are the and I base it around activities, right? Activities that you can try to potentially find that community, right? Because I recognize that oftentimes when we're engaged in an activity, right, our self-esteem, our self-talk often can't really get in the way of that. So can you let's create a list. Let's create a list of maybe some of the things that you've always really wanted to try, but maybe you haven't had the courage to try, or maybe you haven't had the time, right? Is there painting? Is there knitting? Is there woodworking? Is there an exercise class that you'd really like to try? Is there even like a learning class that you'd like to try, that you'd like to be challenged to learn something, whether that's going back to college and just not going back to college, but like taking like a college course, right? And just getting yourself out of a little bit out of your comfort zone, not too much, right? Where you maybe it doesn't you're not incentivized to go, but enough that you are excited to go. And then when you're there, let's look around you, right? Like, who can you just kind of quickly connect with? Like, hey, my name is, introduce yourself. My name is Sam. I'm looking, I'm just really excited to try whatever it is, right? Just connect with people like in that way, and maybe you can, create friendships and, ask people out for coffee, not ask people out, but, invite them for coffee or something like that, to take it to the next step.
Yeah, I think people who are in recovery have an advantage in this area. And I'll tell you, like I will tell you, Seb, this has been a hard fought. I never looked at it like this, but I've dealt with a, you know, I've coached and worked with a lot of high performing people in my career. And one of the things that I notice is that the people that are in recovery are, I don't want to use the word less soft, but people will understand that they're not, people that have been in recovery have had to crawl through it, and they can take a lot of emotional pain, and they can get to a place where they can that they are in recovery. They're not light people, right? Like they can actually take it, right? And they also can go at a pace. And I find that there is this there's this thing. Like, okay, well, what holds back people, right? in recovery from doing it in the self-esteem area is there's a deep, they already know that they could do it. They want the career, the relationship. They maybe want to buy a house. They want to go back to college. They want to do all this other kind of stuff, right? Maybe make a certain amount of money or have a certain lifestyle. They know deep down inside that they have the ability, as opposed to somebody who's never really been through a lot, says, well, I really don't know if I could take that. We know we could take it, right? We know, hey, we're alive. We're alive, right? So we know we could take it, but there is that, but that the fear stops us. And once you kind of break down, like I call it the first olive out of the jar, it's hard to get the first olive out of the jar, but then all the olives come out, right? Like once you could get to that place where you could get over that, that crippling fear, then it's really where the magic starts to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just about taking that first step. And so maybe it is just, you know, taking that first step after, you know, creating that list of like the things that you would like to try or to create or whatever. And, but also recognizing that that fear is telling you something, right, about what's coming up for you. Like we can honor that. We can honor that fear of, this feels really hard. And also it will be really, I feel like it will be really worth it. Right. And the more that we recognize that, like, it could be really worth it to just try. But it takes a lot of like mental, you know, externalizing and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in conclusion here, Sam, I know there's somebody that's listening to the show. They found this clip on YouTube. They're listening to the podcast. They're saying, yeah, like, I know I have to have better self-esteem. I know, like, everything that Damon and Sam are talking about here, I need to do. But, you know, what if it doesn't work out? What if it doesn't work out? What if I'm left, you know, what's going to happen if it doesn't work out, right? In conclusion, what would be your message to people who've just had chronic self-esteem their whole life and they're just stuck? What would you tell them about why they need to take some action?
Well, the question, you know, I think the question that I often hear from people is, what if it doesn't work out? The opposite of that, well, what if it does? We don't know, right? I think the message that I would give to people is we don't know what this might look like if you try, right? But we know that what you're currently doing doesn't feel like it's working, right? So you could ultimately get to make the choice whether or not we stay in this area, or you also get to make the choice to try something different. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be tomorrow you're going to take that run. It doesn't, and you're going to make conversation with that person and you're going to try the new skill that you want to try, or you're going to, you know, engage yourself in a new community. It can be as simple as one step at a time, right? Tomorrow, I am going to go get myself some sun. Sun by you guys, sun not by me in Chicago right now. I'm going to go get myself some sun, or I'm going to go volunteer. I'm going to go sign up to volunteer and maybe make a date to go volunteer with somebody. Or I'm going to go call that friend that I know. I always feel good whenever I talk to them. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It can just be literally one step at a time.
Absolutely. You know, like, recovery is all about a day at a time. Yes. You know, you could do self-esteem a day at a time too. Just do the best that you can in this day. Sam Jones, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Guys, we're going to put how you can get a hold of Sam, some information about her company in all the show notes and some links there if you would like to contact her directly. Sam, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us. Sometimes addiction recovery can be a lonely battle, but you don't have to fight it alone. At Recovered Life, we're dedicated to helping you live your best recovered life. And that's why we're inviting you to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. Every week, we carefully curate exclusive content from leading minds in addiction recovery,
mental health, and all things important to the recovery lifestyle. Stay in the know with the latest news about addiction and get exclusive invitations to specially recovery-focused events and explore insights tailored to support recovery from alcoholism, drug addiction, codependency, disordered eating, dysfunctional family dynamics, gambling, and so much more. With our newsletter, each week becomes an opportunity for growth, healing, and taking a step closer to the life you deserve. Take your first step towards a brighter future today. Go to recoveredlife.us and subscribe for free. Sign up now at recoveredlife.us.